This is All About Living with Carol Colby. All About Living is brought to you by Gunderson Funeral Home Cremation Care, Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison. All About Living with Carol Colby.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to All About Living. I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to want to turn that dial. You're going to want to listen to this program. We have just an amazing guest with us today, and I want you to hear her full story. And remember, this story will also be posted on carolcobyradio.com, Carol Colby, K-O-B-Y, radio.com, sometime next week. So if you don't get a chance to hear it all or want to pass it along to somebody else, that's how they can hear it at their convenience. My guest is a returning guest to the radio program. About 3 years ago or so, it might have been a little bit longer. It was probably, well, before Memorial Day.
March 2009.
You remember that date. I contacted the Vet Center here in Madison because I was preparing for a program for Memorial Weekend. And I wanted to do something on veterans, but I wanted to do something a little bit beyond what was going on in the Veterans Administration or the hospital or whatever, and something special that was really getting at the heart of some of the concerns of our veterans. And I somehow discovered the Vet Center. I think I found you in the Yellow Pages or so, in the phone book. But went over to Williamson Street where your office is, and I met there with the woman who was my guest today, and she is Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden. And better known to her friends, and she told me I must call her Dory also, so I will. And Dory is a licensed clinical social worker and is the team leader of the Madison Vet Center. And the Vet Center are really the people, as they say in their mission statement, who welcome war veterans home with honor by providing readjustment counseling in a caring manner. And Vet Centers understand and appreciate veterans' war experiences while assisting them and their family members toward a successful post-war adjustment in or near their community. And you get involved in some pretty heavy-duty counseling at the Vet Center for those who have been in conflict and the families, veterans who are sexually assaulted or harassed while on active duty, and you do your fair amount of bereavement counseling, too, for families who have had someone die on active duty. So you have probably seen and heard it all, Dory. And I saw Dory's name in the paper then a couple of years ago when the announcement, the big newscast, breaking news came about this shooting in Fort Hood. And I saw a listing of those people wounded, the 29 people wounded, and among the names was Dorothy Karskaden. And I said, oh my goodness, I interviewed her and I know her. She was from Madison, or she was at the Vet Center here in Madison. And I have never heard what happened. I've been concerned. I have been remiss in not following up to find out what did happen, but I have never forgotten you. And when I got an email from you a few weeks ago saying that the second anniversary is coming up of the Fort Hood shooting, you are back in Madison, and you have been, actually, since shortly after that shooting. And you would, if I'd be interested, love to talk about it.
Thank you for letting me come on your show. And what I wanted, the reason I emailed you is I had done that interview with you and enjoyed the show very much and wanted to honor the fallen from my unit and the fallen at Fort Hood by honoring it during their second anniversary, which is November 5th of 2011.
And that's today. Today, mm-hmm. November 5th. This air, we are taping the program just prior to November 5th, but this program will air on the second anniversary of the Fort Hood shooting. I was so happy to hear from you, and you can fill in a couple of the between the lines, but from what I remember of your background, you were in Desert Storm. You were activated in Desert Storm.
I was an active duty soldier at the time, mm-hmm. serving in Germany, and I got activated for Desert Storm, so I was there for that.
That was back in 1991.
And shortly after that, I left active duty, finished up my master's in social work, and got hired by the Vet Center system. And after 11 years of providing counseling to combat theater veterans, I decided to come back into the military as a social worker. So that was May 2008. By October 2008, my unit had been activated for Iraq. We got together and chit-chatted for Memorial Day.
And I was anticipating that you were going to be deployed to Iraq because
correct.
That was the information that you had at the time.
And then in October of 2009, we went to Fort Hunter Liggett, where we found out that we were going, that the unit that we were originally going to go with, the 1908, their destination still turned out to be Iraq, but our destination had changed. They had split us off, our unit, the 467th. We're both combat stress control units, and so what we do is we provide counseling right there on the front lines. And so we were scheduled to go over to Afghanistan, and we would have been the first combat stress control unit in Afghanistan. They were, actually. So for a month, I did training at Fort Hunter Liggett. That was our combat action training.
Was that the one in California?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we learned how to use various types of weapons, how to pound in doors, how to handle a rolling vehicle, you know, all sorts of combat action type training. Then we went over to Fort Hood, where we would get certified in our training, because the Army doesn't send you without a heck of a lot of training. And they have to certify that you are qualified to go to combat theater, that you're emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically capable of going. So we get there the first day, and we have all these checks, paperwork checks. Now, in Fort Hunter Liggett, every day we wore our Kevlar, we wore a helmet, we had a weapon, and we had to turn all of that in California because it was training equipment. And when we got to Fort Hood, about a week after we were scheduled to arrive, we were supposed to get all that equipment. So the first day we're there and doing all of our checks, and that's when we got shot, was within 24 hours of hitting Fort Hood.
Let me just give a little bit of background information on Fort Hood to our listeners, because just to refresh your memory on what happened in Fort Hood. The Fort Hood shooting was a mass shooting that took place on November 5th, 2009. And Fort Hood is the most populous U.S. military installation in the world. I did not know that. And it's located just outside Killeen, Texas. Well, in the course of the shooting, which was done by a U.S. Army major who was serving as a psychiatrist, and he was an American-born Muslim of Palestinian descent. In the course of that shooting, he was a single gunman. He killed 13 people and wounded 21 others.
Actually, they wounded 29
others.
32.
Was it 32? This
was 32.
It was updated to more accurate to be 32, and it is considered the worst shooting ever to take place on an American military base. So when you talk about some military action, this is probably, in the military's mind, at least second to 9/11 as far as anything that's happened on our ground here in the United States of America.
There have been some other shootings, other soldiers who have done some terrible, terrible shootings, but probably, yes, probably since 9/11, this is the biggest.
And just to go through the story, you were going to be deployed. You thought it was Iraq. It was changed to Afghanistan. You went to a base in California for a month, and you went through all of this combat training. And in the combat training, you had to reenact, simulate really what combat would be like. And what were they? They were screaming Arabic at you?
Yeah, they would scream Arabic. They would shoot rubber bullets at us. And I saw the bruises that people got. I was lucky enough not to get hit with a rubber bullet, but they had huge bruises on them. We got shot with paintball guns, which hurt when they hit you. So it was all designed to help us understand what we would be experiencing when we got to a combat theater. We saw videotapes on IEDs blasting vehicles into the air. We got hands-on training on how to jam radio signals. We got hands-on training on all the weapons that are available. We literally pounded down doors and entered rooms. All the time thinking, you know, we're social workers.
Mm-hmm.
We're not supposed to be in these situations. But if you are, you need to have some minimal training to deal with the situation. So we had all of that training, all in full combat gear. So we did that for 30 days.
And then I understand from reading some of the background that Fort Hood is the place that soldiers are sent when they are being deployed out somewhere, or if they're coming back. It's a processing center for entry and exit.
Correct. So what they do is they certify the units they're leaving. So it's a 30-day process where you have to go and actually certify through each of the stations to prove competency. So the military is not sending untrained, uncertified troops out there. They're having a strenuous education. And then on the way back, they do a demobilization process where they debrief folks and make sure that medically and emotionally they're prepared to go home. So they make sure that folks are able to do all of that. And so that's part of their mission. They are a major, major training post for the United States Army.
And after the month in California, you had 3 days leave or whatever in Kansas for just a little R&R, get together with family, friends, whatever, before you went to Fort Hood for this 1 month final certification process before you would be shipped off to Afghanistan.
Correct.
And from my earlier conversation with you, you arrived at Fort Hood 3 o'clock in the afternoon of November 4th.
Correct.
And then what happened?
So we took a bus from Topeka, Kansas over to Fort Hood. So it was an all-night bus ride. We loaded into the barracks, so basically just pulling our personal equipment off the bus and finding a bunk bed and putting our stuff into a locker, taking a shower, getting dinner. And we woke up at dark 30 the next morning, loaded more buses because it was about an hour bus ride just onto the main post. Fort Hood makes Madison look like a little village.
Really?
It's about 400,000 strong on post. So it's a very large spread out. As you can imagine, Texas is very spread out. So it's a very large spread out post. So we took the buses in and we started to go through our dental records, our hearing, eyesight, getting hearing things. Getting our dog tags checked, our life insurance checked, our personal records checked, our medical records checked, getting flu shots, getting a smallpox vaccination. And by the way, those hurt. And just going through all of these checks to make sure that we are personally prepared to go.
And you were going to be a step ahead and get done as much as you could first thing in the morning so that you wouldn't have to be sitting in line and waiting with a whole bunch of people.
This is true. That was my hope. Unfortunately, by the time I got there, the entire place was full. The whole front section was all filled up. So we're talking 70, 80 people up in the front section waiting to talk to a nurse who is a case manager to look over the records and make sure that you actually did get all your checks. And if you didn't, you were sent back to another station to get it properly
done. So you had already had your shots that morning, and so you were going for this
Shots, lab tests, all sorts of things.
And you walked in that room, and that is when the shooting began.
Well, I'd gotten in there and was sitting reading a book. I was actually in an overflow section, so I couldn't even see anyone. I was just in this one little hallway section, which was an overflow section. And all of a sudden, I heard this scream in Arabic, and someone else said, "Get down, get down." Well, I just finished 30 days of training, so if someone says get down, you actually get down. And as I looked up, I was in the middle of the 6-foot dividers throughout this room. And as I looked up, I noticed a hole, and I was like, wow, those blanks are really, really strong. It never occurred to me during this entire time that this was more than a training exercise. And because I was surrounded by these 6-foot barriers, room dividers, I really couldn't see what was happening around me. And so it never really occurred to me with all of this shooting and all of this yelling that it was anything more than what we had just gone through. And I was thinking, you know, this is really piss poor timing for the Army to do this.
I'm going to stop there. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, We're going to begin the story from when you were in that processing center and then tell the story of the shooting. I want to give full time to when you tell the story and not have any breaks in it. So our guest today is Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden, better known as Dory to her friends and family and to this program today. And she was at Fort Hood in Texas on November 5th, 2009. And today marks the second anniversary of the Fort Hood shooting, and it's considered the worst shooting ever to take place on an American military base. She was one of 32 wounded, 13 were killed, and Dorothy will be back to tell the rest of her story after these messages. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Home Health United. You got a friend right here online at homehealthunited.org. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Welcome back to our program. Our guest is Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden. And Dorothy was in Fort Hood, Texas, 2 years ago today. And she was part of the shooting that occurred there, considered the worst shooting ever to take place on an American military base. It is when a U.S. Army major who was serving as a psychiatrist, an American-born Muslim of Palestinian descent, entered a room where soldiers were sitting ready to be processed on their deployment to Afghanistan. And Dorothy was there. She had just arrived the day before, November 4th, after being in California at a fort there for a month in combat training in preparation for going to Afghanistan. Arrived at Fort Hood as the final stop before Afghanistan, and you were going to be there for a month. You were telling us before the break, you got your shots the morning of November 5th, and you were going to go through all the processing, the checkout, to make sure that you got all the shots and everything that you were doing was correct and nothing had to be redone. And you went into this post, this building, and it was already full, and you went into an overflow area, and you were sitting there reading a book and waiting to be called, and you assumed, I suppose, it was going to be a long wait, and then continue.
Yes, I kind of assumed it was going to be a long wait. Now, these are not only my unit, but our sister unit, the 1908, soldiers who were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. There was a combat engineer company that was there that was going, I believe, to Afghanistan. So there were a lot of people there. And I called it my scavenger hunt because you had to run from place to place to place to get these little check marks. And I was so disappointed to find out I was in the overflow area. I knew it was going to be probably a 2-3 hour wait. Probably within about a half hour, the shooting started, and when they said get down, I did. And when I looked up at the wall next to me, empty room with room dividers. So I mean, and desks scattered everywhere. I looked up and I saw a hole in it, and my first thought was, wow, those blanks are really tough.
Because you thought it was another combat training, just like you'd been through in California.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you had heard plenty of Arabic in California, so when you heard, first of all, I understand you heard a few Arabic words, and then the shooting started in Fort Hood.
Yes, yes. And then when I looked down the aisle, I saw a woman who was crying, a young American soldier who was crying and worried about her baby. So I went over and I was talking to her, and I saw her, you know, her shoulders, and that was about it. I mean, her shoulders, her head, because she had crawled underneath a chair, and the room divider was right there, so I couldn't see anything wrong with her. And so I talked to her and told her, you know, this is going to be over soon, calm on down. So she calmed on down and
still thinking it was a training mission.
Still thinking it's a training exercise, have no clue of what's going on. All of a sudden, one of the room dividers fell over and people were starting to come over the room divider, and I thought I was going to be stepped on. And this woman was underneath a chair, so I turned into this empty area, which is where we got our flu shots earlier in the day. And that's when I got shot. That's when all of a sudden my leg went numb. And I'm like, okay, I'm probably going the wrong way. So I turned to go a different way, and all of a sudden I just started hurting in my stomach. Well, come to find out later, when I was told to get down on the ground at the very beginning, I had had a bullet graze my head, so I still have shrapnel in my head. Then when I had gone into the flu area and my leg went numb, I got shot twice. Once, one bullet went fully through my pelvic bone, that's why I was unable to walk. The other one went through my entire thigh, and I still have a full bullet lodged in the inner thigh of my leg. And then the last bullet hit me in my stomach and shattered into my stomach, tearing up my colon.
And that's
intestines.
When you thought, I'm not enjoying this. This isn't
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, I thought, I'm through with this training exercise. I'm not going to move. I'm done. You know, and I'm like, you know, those plastic bullets really hurt. So, you know, really the biggest harm, the thing that hurt me the most was the bullet to my abdomen. That one really, really hurt. And so then I'm laying there. They said, all clear. Triage, people, triage. And you've never seen anything so amazing as when all of a sudden the military just gets into a very disciplined mode. Up to this point, you could kind of get an idea of a lot of chaos. So you have 80 people with no weapons trying to get out of a very small building with limited exits and each person trying not to get in the way of another person. Well, then when they said triage, all of a sudden you just kind of get this, everyone doing the same thing. I can tell you in hindsight, if I would have been at Walmart, I wouldn't be here today. Because someone came on over to me. Apparently the shooter came back into the room, so everyone scattered again. And then he left again. And I do know that the woman who was shot, unfortunately I found out later she died. Specialist Velez, I didn't know her. She was a young woman who was returning from Iraq and was pregnant.
Francesca Velez.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 21 years old, private first class.
Yes. And I.
And she and her unborn child did not survive.
No, they didn't. That will always be a sadness that I have. I do know that she was treated before I was. They realized immediately that she was pregnant, started calling for neonatal type bandages. Now remember, this is a small medical clinic. So they were there to do flu shots. They were there to do smallpox vaccinations, pull some blood for labs. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have a lot of bandages. They didn't have any surgical equipment. They didn't have anything that would be for major, something such as that we were in.
And I understand there was blood everywhere, that it was even difficult for walking.
I have no idea. I didn't see any of that. I was over
in
the
reading
flu
about
shot.
It, that's
yeah.
what I read somewhere, where it was just difficult even walking because it was slippery.
Absolutely. I mean, you had 42 people shot. I was one of there were very few people, I think less than five of us, who were not shot in that one section. Some of the folks were shot up to six times. So I wasn't the worst by any means. And
then someone was assigned to you.
Yeah, then I got pulled over. They pulled me from where I was out to the main area of the building. Then my commander and someone else helped me outside where Private Armstrong, who had been shot, was sitting. And Private Armstrong, his job was to watch over me as, you know, to make sure that my condition didn't get any worse. And so at one point I started realizing, oh, you know, I feel nice and comfortable now. So I looked at him and I said, Armstrong, I think I'll go into shock now. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Shock sounds good. So needless to say, this poor private sits there, Captain, she's going into shock, folks. She's going into shock. And I remember feeling like four or six people grab the sides of my uniform, pick me straight up and run me into the shade where they started to pull off my boot. And I quickly told them, that's attached to my leg. My leg hurts. because all of the bullets went in. Nothing went out. So there's very little blood. I mean, when I saw my leg, I actually had an opportunity to look down at my leg, and there was looked like less than what a paintball would have left. So very little blood. So they tried to start, they started an IV on me, and I'm sitting there as they're trying to start this IV, going, we just had this in training, folks. Everyone has to learn how to put in an IV. You ought to be able to do this. You know, so I'm thinking, you know, I'm not speaking a heck of a lot other than, you know, come on, folks. And, you know, because putting IVs into injured people is literally part of the Army training these days. Every single person must be able to put an IV in. So I'm kind of watching them put this IV in, and they finally get it in, and I'm like, okay, great. They cut off my boot. They're cutting up my leg to try to figure out where my injuries are. And someone brings over this blue backboard. They flip me up, and I'm just like, oh, you know, that really hurts. And they're like, sorry about that. And they flip me back down. They went to go pick me up, and someone stepped on my IV, and I'm like, oh, you took my IV out, man. So I get loaded into an ambulance.
You were kind of arm's length from yourself and still saying these things and doing it because of the whole being injured and
being in shock is an amazing thing.
Yeah, and so you were saying these things, but you were almost looking at yourself and saying them.
Yeah. And so I was in and out of consciousness. I remember at one point being in an emergency room, I guess, and them pulling me, and I'm like a rag doll, and I'm kind of going, oh, you know, that really hurts, people. And I remember them apologizing profusely. And then I remember going, at one point, I remember someone saying, I'm sorry, but we have to x-ray you. So I don't, apparently, and I don't remember this at all, apparently the CAT scan was down at Darnell Army Hospital where I was taken. And so they had to medevac me over to Scott and White Hospital. Then they medevaced me back for the surgery. So my surgery was actually at Darnell. And I had the privilege later in my stay, when I was wandering around the hospital, to go down to the ER and to thank the doctors. And they said, you know, you were in this room. This is what was going on around you. I was the one who was patching you up. And some of those details I really didn't need to know. They said, oh, yeah, well, you died a couple of times, but that's okay. We got you back. So it was apparently pretty touch and go. It's an amazing thing to how the body heals.
Well, you went through surgery, and before we go to a break, the surgery was extensive, and they thought they lost you a couple of times. And
it was about 15 hours, yeah.
15-hour surgery. And so you went to ICU then, I'm assuming, and you woke up, and who did you see standing there?
The first person I remember was meeting President and Laura Bush.
They were standing next to your bed.
Yes. I have no idea. I mean, I kind of remember them coming on in, saying thank you, and then going back to sleep.
Wow. We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden is here. She's here on the second anniversary of the shooting at Fort Hood, which took place November 5th, 2009, to tell her story and to honor the fallen soldiers and those who were wounded. And we're going to make a special time in this program to do that as well. You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Oak Park Place. Live life, live well. We'll be right back.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670, WTDY.
Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden is here, known to her friends and family as Dory. She's team leader at the Madison Vet Center, and she's a licensed clinical social worker. I met her 3 years ago when she was on this program. We were talking about the wonderful services, the very difficult services that the Vet Center offers, and the counseling that is available and the resources that are available. And that's a major point that you always want to make, is that there are resources out there for veterans. So no matter how bad the situation is, whether it's physical, psychological, difficulty in employment or whatever, there's somebody out there to help anybody who is a veteran. So
absolutely. There are lots and lots of resources for veterans.
And then Dorothy was at that time to be deployed to Iraq, but it turned out she was being deployed to Afghanistan instead. After training for a month and combat training in California, she ended up going through processing right before heading out to Afghanistan, going through the processing center at Fort Hood, Texas. And she was there. It was going to be her first full day there on November 5th, 2009. And that is the day of the Fort Hood shooting, a mass shooting that killed 13 people, wounded 32, and the worst shooting ever to take place on an American military base. Dory was one of the wounded soldiers. And she has just finished telling the story of her being shot, and you thought it was just another combat training experience, and you didn't realize that it was a real shooting going on just because it was just what you had been through. The military is awesome. They triaged, and for that reason, probably more of the wounded lived than wouldn't have lived in any other situation.
Absolutely. And you know, when I woke up, I realized very quickly, by the time I got to good consciousness, I realized very quickly that I was not going to be deployed.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And you were telling about after your 15-hour surgery where they thought they lost you twice on the table, you woke up out of the surgery, and the first people you remember seeing were George and Laura Bush, former President Bush and his wife Laura, standing next to your bed and saying thank you.
Yes.
And there you have in front of us, and this is radio, but I always like to create a vision on radio because I asked you to bring your coins. I was not familiar with this concept of coins, but top military people, top leaders, all have these big coins.
Well, and what you do is the coins are, one of the traditions is if you are coined, meaning you're at a bar and someone says, pull out your coins, whoever has the highest coin gets the beer paid for. So I think, you know, there's one woman in the state of Wisconsin who has a Medal of Honor coin. She beats me. There's a chaplain who has a chaplain's coin. The consensus is that beats me. But there's very few people who can pull out two presidential coins.
And that means that these people personally visited you and you had conversations with all these people.
Absolutely.
And you have 23 coins, and they're beautiful coins. And here's one. On one side it says the president, the seal of the president of the United States. And on the back it says George W. Bush, commander-in-chief. And then the next day by your bedside, you were handed a coin by two visitors. And this one says the 44th president of the United States of America, Barack Obama.
And yes, it came for the memorial.
And it's the seal of the President of the United States. And then there's another coin, Department of Defense, United States of America, Robert M. Gates, Secretary of Defense. Here's another coin presented by the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. And it goes on and on and on.
I had a lot of people visiting me. I was in the ICU for 11 days, and they said that at Darnell Army Hospital, I had more mail addressed to me and saw more people than they've ever had. And I just kind of, and I know it wasn't about me. It was about me being a soldier during one of the worst incidents in military history. So I felt it, because I was an officer, I felt it my duty to represent the military as best I could and to see people and to provide them with a smile and hope. So, you know, the military treated me very, very well, and I made sure that I was able to pass that on to any visitors who came by.
So they actually asked for information from you, your opinion and how you were treated, and they were concerned and they wanted to know.
Absolutely. They wanted to know exactly how we were all being treated. I think probably my best experience is every day I would get out of my bed and get my walker and take the 10 steps out the door over to Specialist Johnson's room and say, "Dude, it's your turn, man," and walk on back. He was a young man who was shot in the lungs and was seriously, seriously injured. He ended up staying in ICU much longer than me. But that would be, I found out later that he was actually deployed to Afghanistan. So he was a young man that had some serious wounds, healed up, and still went on his deployment.
Was that his decision, or the military assumed that he was well enough?
A little bit of both. Most soldiers want to do their duty, and he was a young active duty soldier with a combat engineer unit, and he wanted to be with his fellow soldiers. And so a lot of the active duty folks ended up going. I was a reservist, so my job was to come home and heal.
And I did notice quite a large number of those that were wounded, if they were able, they were deployed and they went to Afghanistan.
Yes, those would be the active duty folks.
Yeah, the active duty. Then how long were you there? Were you in the hospital then in a room for a while? And then were you sent back to Madison immediately, or what happened next?
I was shot November 5th. I got back to Madison the day before Thanksgiving. So it was a pretty quick trip. Now that I had in-processed with the Army, I had to actually out-process with the Army. So I had spent 11 days in the hospital, most of it in the ICU. I spent like 3 days up on the ward, learning how to just get around with my walker, because, of course, I had a bullet through my hip, so my hip had to heal. I made sure I got an X-ray of my head because that wound was so small that they didn't even document it. Had to get all my paperwork together so I could come back to Wisconsin.
I have mentioned the shooter was an Army major psychiatrist, and that he was of Palestinian descent, American-born, but I haven't mentioned his name, and that's out of respect for your wishes. And explain that, why you don't want his name mentioned.
Yes, it doesn't trouble me to mention his name. I just don't think it's worth remembering. I think that we had 13 soldiers who were injured. I mean, 13 soldiers who died, they are worth remembering. 32 were injured. There were many, many feats of heroism. Sergeant Clark, for example, she was shot through her femur, her arm, and it hit the bone, shattered the bone. As she was running out of the building, someone had fallen. She had helped that person up and helped them out the door first. She had picked up this young man who had been shot and pulled him behind a bin as a shooter was coming out the door. And so she probably saved two lives that day. And then she started, when the shooter was down and captured, she started providing first aid. And when another soldier who had torn off his entire uniform doing bandages had run out of uniform, called over to her, said, "Can I have your uniform?" She takes off her uniform. And as she's doing that, another Sergeant Lechner looks over at Sergeant Clark and says, "Sergeant Clark, you've been shot." She looks down and at that point passes out. The number and the stories of heroism are what I wish to remember. Soldiers' Angels, they will be having an event, I'm not quite sure, but right around Veterans Day here in town. And they sent me lots of cards. They sent everyone who was shot cards and blankets and stuffed animals just to show their thanks. They do that every day to soldiers who are stationed all around the world, watching out for them. There were people across the United States. I had a family write me that I hadn't heard from since I was 10, writing me letters and saying, oh my goodness, this is you. We want to know what's happening. So it was quite an overwhelming experience to be in the center of all this and to realize that it really wasn't me, Dory, but it was me as Captain Karskadon. I was a soldier who had been unfortunately shot in this huge incident that reminded America why we were soldiers. And to, unfortunately, it was someone from Virginia who shot us. And he was born and raised an American. So he, his life is over. It's not worth remembering.
Well, he was shot and
paralyzed.
So
he gave up his career in the military, which is a very honorable career. He gave up all of his education of being a psychiatrist because who wants to have them be treated by a psychiatrist who shot 42 people? He gave up his entire life and in return is now paralyzed from the waist down and will spend the rest of his life in jail. So.
And he hasn't yet gone to trial for.
He goes trial in March 2012.
And then we'll see what the final outcome and whether they'll look at it as mental disease or what they will, what the charges will be, or whether it is
There's a lot of speculation out there, and I just don't choose to go into that.
We're going to stop for a break, and when we come back, let's focus on the fallen, on the wounded, and the those who were killed, and the wonderful work of the military. It had to be very energizing and inspiring to you to have this outpouring of love from not only your military family, but from the nation as a whole. And sometimes we come across kind of callous and uncaring, and you can get cynical, but it's wonderful to see that we rise to the occasion when it counts.
It was quite overwhelming, and so I was just focused on being appreciative and gracious.
You're listening to All About Living here on Madison 1670 WTDY. This segment of our program has been brought to you by Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, the Life Celebration Center. And we'll be back with our few minutes, with Dory, Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden, right after these messages.
This is All About Living with Carol Colby, Madison 1670 WTDY.
We just have a few minutes left with Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden. Dory was shot at Fort Hood 2 years ago today. It is the second anniversary of the Fort Hood mass shooting that took place, where 13 were killed, 32 were wounded. And this segment of our program is brought to you by Turville Bay MRI and Radiation Oncology Center in Madison, where expertise with compassion is powerful medicine. Dory, I see on the list of those who were killed, the 13, there were two from Wisconsin. Amy Sue Kruger, who is a staff sergeant, she was from Kiel, Wisconsin. And then Russell Gilbert Seeger, who was a captain, and he was from Racine, Wisconsin. So we lost some of our own from our own state of Wisconsin right there. And, of course, you were here at the Madison Vet Center and were being deployed to Afghanistan. So you were one of the wounded as well.
And I actually knew five of the people.
Yes, and you want to particularly honor those people you knew and what they did. So tell me about these five. You wear their names on a bracelet.
Yes, I wear a bracelet that says 467th and 1908. Those are both combat stress control units. What we do is provide counseling at forward operating bases. So right there where the soldier is, helping them to move through the trauma of maybe having a friend or a buddy die, or a girlfriend break up with them, or whatever issue happens to come up, roommate or command or whatever. So we help them take care of that. So, you know, being shot by a psychiatrist is kind of insulting. And it says, who will go for us? Here I am, send me. And it has a date, November 11th, 2009. And Major Eduardo Caraveo was part of our unit. He was a psychologist who was stationed, who was actually lived in Virginia, and he would come here to Madison, Wisconsin, and train with us. He had been with the unit for quite some time, for several years, and he had already gone down to Guantanamo Bay and did operations down at Guantanamo. He had his own company where he was a motivational speaker, so he's a very uplifting man. He worked for the Department of Justice looking at sexual predators and how to, whether or not they should come out of the federal system or whether they were too dangerous. So he was very talented as a psychologist, quite a loss to the country, quite a loss to the Department of Justice. Captain John Gaffney was in the 1908. He had been in the military in various branches. He had run tanks, and he had done all sorts of things. He went back to school. He became a nurse, and he was with the 1908 specifically to go to Iraq and provide psychological nursing, which is the only people in our unit who can dispense needed medication. Right there close to the front lines. As you mentioned, Staff Sergeant Amy Kruger, she joined our unit after we got activated to go to Iraq. She purposefully came because she had already been deployed and wanted to go again. So she had a tattoo on her back that said, "Some gave all and all gave some," which was quite foretelling for her. Captain Russ Seeger, as you said. Russ was out of Milwaukee. He worked for the VA Medical Center there in Milwaukee as another psychiatric nurse. He was our psychiatric nurse for the 467th. So during training, anytime I had, we would be carrying a lot of stuff. We always had a rucksack with us, our weapon, helmet, a flak jacket, so about 50, 60 pounds all the time. And I'd come up and go, "Yo, Russ, do you got some aspirin, man?" And he goes, "Well, what kind do you want? Do you want Tylenol, ibuprofen? Do you want, It's like, "Just something, Russ, man." And then the last one was Colonel Warman. She was mother of five girls. She had been deployed several times. Mm-hmm. She also worked for the VA out in Maryland. I had the privilege of meeting the people who had worked with her when I went to Washington, D.C. for the Women Veterans Conference in D.C. this past year. An amazing woman. She was in occupational therapy. So her job would have been to help the soldier remember how to do basic soldiering tasks so that they could get back to their unit, kind of move through any of their traumas. These are amazing, amazing people who gave to this country in amazing ways, well-trained, well-respected, two working for the VA. So the VA lost some very good practitioners that day. And, yes, it saddens me deeply. And I am still in touch with Major Caraveo's wife, who they had a 3-year-old son. Mm. Who will grow up without a father. Captain Gaffney and Captain Seeger both had teenage sons who will go through life without a father.
And then the five daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm so glad we had a chance to have you tell us a little bit about these wonderful people. They'll be missed individually by many and as a country as a whole for what they did. And you as well. Thank you so much. As Morgan Welk, our producer, said to you at the beginning of the show, I was so pleased to meet you, and thank you for what you have done and what you do.
Thank you for allowing me to come here and speak.
Army Captain Dorothy Karskaden. Dory was shot 2 years ago today at Fort Hood. She is back in Madison at the Vet Center, and if you need any resources, if you are a vet, it is the place to go. vetcenter.va.gov. 1-877-WAR-VETS is a 800 phone number, and the Vet Center, the Madison Vet Center, is located on Williamson Street. And what is the address?
706 Williamson.
And you are open for any veterans to be there for them and whatever needs they might have. Thank you for being. I want you to come back again. We've got so much more to talk about. Thank you for being here today, Dory. Thank you for listening to All About Living. I'm Carol Kobe. Our program is also available on carolkobe.com. Now go out and have a great rest of the weekend.